live from Gather at Deer District in Milwaukee, site of Game 6 of the NBA Finals tonight. The Bucks have an opportunity to clinch their first title in 50 years if they can get that win this evening. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. We are in that little glass box you see right there. I am here with Kendrick Perkins, NBA champ. Richard Jefferson, NBA champ, and apparently bread model.
I've been told that my head looks like a well-baked piece of bread. So why are you laughing so hard?
Like a roll? Are we talking about like a dinner roll?
Yeah, but only like the good kind, like the freshly baked Hawaiian bread roll.
Like a popover.
Oh, yeah, fresh out the oven with butter on top.
So apparently we will be talking about that in this show, and we will also be delving into all things NBA Finals. But first, to set up tonight's game. The road to an NBA title, it's long. For players, it takes thousands of hours of work, oceans of sacrifice. For franchises, it can take even longer. Just look at the Bucks, who tonight had the chance to win the NBA Finals. Since the team's last title, it's been 50 years of training camps and trades, of hopes raised and dashed, of hired coaches, fired GMs, old arenas coming down, new arenas coming up. And even when a team manages to, say, take a chance on a gangly kid from Greece and watch him turn into a superstar, it's hardly an overnight project. The Bucks drafted Giannis in 2013. That was 8 years ago. And only tonight, for the first time, are they getting the chance to play for a ring. So there's a lot of irony then that on this long, long road, so often the difference between winning and losing comes down to just an inch or two. Go back to Milwaukee's very first game of these playoffs, which the Bucks won in literally the last second of overtime, thanks to that Chris Middleton jumper. If the flight of that ball had been just an inch or two in either direction, if Milwaukee had lost that opening game at home, all the Bucks' past playoff demons would have come out to play. But thanks to Chris, that ball was true, and Milwaukee started rolling. Or what about in the second round against Brooklyn, when the Nets managed to max out that series despite all their injuries, when Kevin Durant was so automatic he often appeared to be shooting on a Nerf hoop? It took just an inch, maybe even a half an inch, to save Milwaukee in Game 7, when the tip of KD's shoe became the difference between a Brooklyn game winner that would have ended the Bucks playoff run right there, or a two-pointer that merely forced overtime. And I want to be clear, I am not saying Milwaukee just got lucky. The Bucks were the ones who went out and won that overtime to advance past the Nets and into the conference finals. But even if you have legit earned your spot, you need those little inches here or there to go right for you or wrong for your opponent, which is what happened in the Hawks in that next round the Bucks played. Remember when Trae Young reached his foot back to get some traction, unwittingly pushing into a referee so hard it gave him a bone bruise? What if Trae had turned just an inch or two up court first and then extended his leg backward? Maybe he never gets hurt. Maybe the Hawks force Milwaukee's playoff road into a permanent detour. Or what about in these finals? That insane block Giannis had on DeAndre Ayton in Game 4 was a matter of, yes, inches. If either Ayton or Giannis approaches the hoop at a slightly different angle, just an inch or two difference, that play either becomes a goaltending call on Giannis or Ayton dunking on Giannis's head. The Suns would have tied the game with just a little over a minute to play and easily could have taken a 3-1 lead in these finals. Instead, Giannis got every inch correct there. And the Bucks changed the momentum of the series. Which leads us to Game 5 and that final sequence we've seen so often in the past couple days. Watch it in slow motion. What if Devin Booker doesn't turn so sharply away from PJ Tucker, maybe stopped an inch or two shorter in his rotation, and therefore not as vulnerable to Drew Holiday stealing the ball? What if Drew, once he was running up the court, had been an inch or two lower on his pass for Giannis and that incredible alley-oop had been intercepted and maybe run back the other way? Except Drew wasn't an inch too low. He was dead on, and the Bucks are now on the doorstep of a title. And you know, if Milwaukee wins tonight, there will be a lot of talk about what a long time coming this championship will have been, and that will all be correct. Still, if it does happen, don't forget how narrow the margins had to be, how over and over, a journey that spanned decades was affected by just an inch or two, and how a team mastering those tiny details is what makes a giant accomplishment, if they can do it, even more impressive. So, guys, Giannis has back-to-back MVPs in his career. He's had 5 straight All-Star games, all NBA teams, won the Defensive Player of the Year, Most Improved Player, as well as the All-Star Game MVP earlier this season. So when we talk about someone who has collected all those little inches, Richard, done all those details well enough to get to the doorstep of a title, if he can pull it off and walk through that door, what would this mean for his legacy and the way people look at him?
Well, I think it's so early to talk about his legacy because he is 26 years old. But, like, when you think about it's just what you're doing is you're just shrinking the company, right? That's what you're constantly doing. You get yourself into a spot where how many players have ever had a stretch like that, a 5-year stretch, a 4-year stretch? Not many in NBA history. And so I think the fewer people that can say they've done what you've done, that's where you start getting into elite company. This is just another piece of the pie for him, and hopefully a couple more if we want to start talking about in the greatest player and the greatest power forward, as this big man's going to talk about it quickly.
Yeah, I can't talk quickly. I only could talk slow, but I am going to talk about it. When it comes down to Giannis' legacy, I'm talking about if he finishes and wins the championship and the finals MVP, we could just put him in the top 10 power forward of all time conversation for the simple fact that I get he has 2 MVPs. I get he has a Defensive Player of the Year. But the thing that stands out to the most to me is the Defensive Player of the Year award along with the MVP award in the same season. There's only 2 other guys that have accomplished that in the history of the game, and that's Michael Jordan and Hakeem Olajuwon. And when you look at his short career right now, where Giannis not just scratching the surface of his prime, the prime is between 27 and 34 years of age, he has a long way to go. But his resume is longer than, you know, In-N-Out Burger at 11 p.m. at night.
I've never been to In-N-Out.
I have.
At 11 p.m.
I have.
We can
tell. It's a big person problem.
I know.
It's not your problem.
I'm sorry. Continue, Rachel.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, look, if he can win a title here, right, whether it's tonight, whether it's in a Game 7, I do think it will affect what MVP voters do in the future. There was definitely some voter fatigue with Giannis that we saw this year. He had some very good numbers this season, but wasn't in really any of those MVP conversations because a lot of voters felt like, okay, fool me once, fool me twice, but if you're not going to actually be able to punch through and even just play for a championship, make a finals, much less win one, I don't know if you can be the most valuable guy in the league. Whether that was fair or not, that was definitely an articulated position.
But there's going to
and
be
if
voter
he
fatigue
wins,
regardless.
Okay, I agree. We saw that with MJ. Yeah. We saw it with LeBron.
Yeah,
but the voter fatigue stopping after 2 MVPs versus possibly more MVPs.
Yeah.
I think if Giannis wins this title, in even just the short term, from what we saw, I'm going off what we saw this past year with voters who didn't vote him MVP, who didn't vote him Defensive Player of the Year, because there was a little bit of a, like, show me attitude. Yeah. Well, if he manages to show all of them, then, yeah, I think that will affect his voting and sort of his legacy and results for the next couple years in a way that will just add to that resume, add all those accolades.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we can have, if they win tonight, Perk, I'm warning you now, we're going to have that top 10 forward of all time power forward conversation.
It's perfectly fine, but none of those power forwards have won a Defensive Player of the Year and the MVP in the same year, along with winning the championship and the finals MVP. So bring it on.
Perk, you are 100% right, and that's going to be the only time I say this today. but again, when you're talking about legacy, it's the company. How many people can say they've done what you have done? And to your point, there's only 2 or 3 that can have, you know, you're going to start looking at the Karl Malones, you're going to start looking at the Tim Duncans, you're going to start looking at all of those individuals, and that's an elite, elite company to be a part of.
But there is also the company he would be in the Bucks universe, right? So we just saw a video of Kareem, of Oscar Robertson. The same way with certain teams, those big franchises like the Celtics and Lakers, you can have a player who is possibly one of the greatest players of all time, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but is he the best Laker? Does that title go to Magic or Kobe, right? So when you, within the Bucks universe, sure, Giannis is going to add to his legacy if he can win this tonight in terms of the NBA universe. But in the Bucks universe, this puts him solidly with Oscar, with Kareem in a way that is just, I think that legacy here in Milwaukee will be cemented in a way that he will then be able to have a free meal here in the city anytime he likes for the rest of his life. Let's move on to the Phoenix side of the equation because they are facing elimination, guys, for the first time in this postseason. The last time a team went on the road for Game 6 in the finals and forced a Game 7 was when the Pistons did it back in 2005. Kirk, I can tell you, as someone who is flying between Detroit and San Antonio over and over and over again during that series, it was quite a thing when they forced the whole series back to San Antonio. Now, the Spurs did end up winning then, but still, how do the Suns approach this game so they can be like those Pistons and not be done tonight?
Well, I think it's all about their mindset, obviously, right? And then you want to come in on the road and you want to take the crowd out of it. And I think the good thing with the Suns is that they had that game four experience, right? Where they were up and they saw that they could play in this arena and battle with the Milwaukee Bucks. It would have been a different story if it was two back-to-back blowouts in game three and game four. But the fact that they gained confidence in this building is all the Suns need. They just have to go out there and play their style of game, meaning no turnovers, play a gender-free basketball on both ends of the floor and play with that sense of urgency. Now, with that being said, I feel like all the pressure is on the Milwaukee Bucks tonight. So coming into this arena, when you look at the Milwaukee Bucks, all the pressure was on the Phoenix Suns in game five. Milwaukee has all the pressure. You at home, you must close this out, right? So you're coming into this game, and you have to have that mindset if you're the Bucks that we're not trying to go to a game seven. We're not trying to go back to Phoenix where this young core is comfortable at, where Mikal Bridges is shooting, you know, night and day yet. So we're not trying to go there.
I mean, the pressure has to be a little bit.
Wait a second. Like I'm not going to let you sit up here and lie to the people.
You didn't let me do nothing.
I let you lie to the people because this is the truth. Like, to your point, Rachel.
No, this is your opinion.
You cannot say that the pressure is all on the Milwaukee, but the pressure's on Phoenix. You want to know why the pressure is really on Phoenix? Because the Milwaukee Bucks have already proven that they can win in Phoenix also. So just because they, if they were to happen to lose this game, it's not like their confidence wouldn't be great going into game seven because they just won a game there on game seven. Now, this is what I think the Suns need to approach this first elimination game as. You've done this. It's what coaches talk about all year long. We've done all the work to put ourselves in this position. They were the best road team in the entire NBA all year long. You put yourself, you've played in every climate, you've played in front of every type of group, so that when you get here to a must win on the road, you have that to fall back on. You have that confidence. You're Monty Williams. You can come in and say, you know what? You guys, this young team was the best road team in the league. Now we have a must win on the road. That's why you put in your work. That's what all that confidence comes from. And I don't know what Perk is talking about, but I'll let him finish. I know he's going to want to say something.
I mean, I understand you talking about the Milwaukee Bucks getting game five, which was a huge win. But just because you post syrup on it don't make pancakes, all right? And at the end of the day,
No, it don't.
It's a lot of the other things that could happen. But with that being said, what I'm saying is that the pressure,
and you know, sausage,
and a loaf of bread, a roll. Hey, but listen,
just a little drizzle.
Rachel, Richard, know that going into game six, when you at home, you want to close that out. Nobody wants to go to game seven on the road.
It's a tricky thing in approach, too. Like, the Suns' approach is easy. You got to win tonight. You got to play desperate. Every minute counts. All that stuff. Bring out every Monty-ism that we've heard through these playoffs. Other side of hard. Let's go. With the Bucks, it's a little bit more delicate because you have to make sure that your team is as motivated as the Suns, as desperate, as scrappy. And you kind of have to put into guys' heads, like, hey, this is our best chance to win. We don't want to go back to Phoenix for a game seven. But you can't tell your team, hey, we have to win tonight because it's a disaster if we go back to Phoenix for a game seven, because they could end up going back to Phoenix for a game seven. So it's a little bit more delicate in terms of the mindset on that side. We will discuss so much more about what's going to happen in tonight's game coming up. We also have a little update from Steve Kerr about Klay Thompson's progress.
Let's go.
We'll discuss realistic expectations for him next season and give you the news as well. Next on The Jump, keep it locked. Maple syrup. So, guys, Scott Foster, one of the officials listed for tonight's game. Much has been made of the Chris Paul-Scott Foster win-loss record.
Perk, by Chris Paul.
Perk, do you care that Scott Foster is officiating tonight?
I do care. You know why? I want Scott Foster officiating the game today. I want Tony Brothers officiating the game today. Two respected referees that don't care about stars and don't get intimidated by superstars. These type of referees I want in the NBA Finals.
See, look. He just tries to help him, and Chris pushes him right there. Look, at the end of the day, my thing is this. Chris Paul, this is why you don't do that. This is why you don't put that stat into your teammates' heads, a bunch of young players on the road.
But don't think that then it's going to put more eyes on the game?
Scott Foster, the referees, you don't get into that job.
The respect I have for Scott and Tony and all those guys, so that is not what I'm going to make it very
clear.
But it is more scrutinized.
There's two things that there are no consciences. One is the referee game, and you know what the other one is.
Maple syrup. It's about maple syrup you're talking.
You don't have no comment.
Welcome back to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols. I am here with Richard Jefferson. I am here with Kendrick Perkins. We have discussed many breakfast foods you can put syrup on. We will update you later in the show, but I do want to talk Warriors right now because we've got a little bit of news as they approach the draft. Golden State, of course, has two lottery picks, and after Steph Curry's MVP finalist season, there is a lot of talk about the direction this team should go in the next year. We also know that Klay, after missing last season with a torn Achilles, Steve Kerr gave us a little update today. He said Klay has resumed running people, so he doesn't just boat around the bay in San Francisco. The man runs as well. Here is the quote. Not full contact yet, Steve says of Klay. He said he's still always a ways away from actually playing basketball in a 5-on-5 setting. But there is a big step with Achilles when you can actually start running again. It's a huge psychological boost. So, Richard, if the Warriors want to be a contender next season, you got to think Klay factors into that huge. So what are your expectations for him? And remember, he came out at one point and said in this past year and said, don't expect me to be like 100% of myself off the bat, or maybe not even actually start the first week of the season.
Yeah, no, he should take his time because, you know, the Warriors window is still there, mm-hmm. right? And so my expectations for Klay are just to kind of get going. Like that stroke ain't going nowhere. That wrist, that hand, that jump shot, now to get his legs, to get in the endurance, to becoming the type of player that can put up a game six Klay,
right.
you know, as we know. But I will say this, though, Klay is 31. Steph is 33.
Mm-hmm.
Like when people start looking at these draft picks, like you have a window to win championships with these two for maybe three more years, four more years.
Have you been on Warriors Twitter this morning? That is pretty much their like constant drumbeat.
I was not. I actually stay away from Warriors Twitter.
Well, that's probably a good idea
for you. But yes. I just think that the Warriors, they have this window right now, and it starts the day that Klay can start playing again.
Well, I think Klay is going to be Klay, right? We watched KD be KD. Everybody was kind of like worrying how he was going to come back off of Achilles tear. And he came back just fine, looking like Kevin Durant of old. When you look at a guy like Klay Thompson, who don't rely on his explosiveness like a guy like Russell Westbrook, a guy that's just a straight-up sniper, he just basically running. He don't rely on athleticism. I feel like he's going to come back and he still could have an impact, even if he's at 70% to start the season and gradually take it slow. I love what the Brooklyn Nets did with Kevin Durant, monitoring him throughout the season for sitting him out certain games and certain situations, things to that nature. So I think Klay is going to be Klay.
Yeah, and understand this too. There's been a lot of players with this Achilles recently. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it's John Wall, Rudy Gay, Steve Kerr said he talked to Rudy Gay, Boogie Cousins. So there's almost like this camaraderie of guys like, hey, how are you doing? This is what my doctor said. Where's your benchmark? So there's actually a lot of support with coming over these injuries because so many guys have had them recently.
Yeah, and they're all exchanging information. And Klay said that he's talked to different guys, including KD and all of that. But yes, your point about the timeline is the reason there is so much pressure on the Warriors coming into this draft, because those draft picks are more valuable when you haven't made them yet, right? Because you are offering another team in trade possibility, as opposed to offering them in trade a specific guy that you picked that they might not want. So it will be interesting to see if they make any moves leading into next Thursday, because as I said, there is a lot of just sort of, you know, elbowing and wrestling of like, hey, Klay and Steph's timeline is here. Draymond's timeline also up there. Mm-hmm. A new kid coming in at 19, not the same timeline. And we saw that with James Wiseman this past year. All right, let's move on to our coaching carousel, because yes, This is its final run, ladies and gentlemen. Nuggets associate head coach Wes Unseld Jr. has indeed agreed to a 4-year contract as the next head coach of the Washington Wizards. He was introduced yesterday. He marks a good hiring cycle for African-American head coaches. In this hiring cycle, black head coaches have filled 6 of the 7 openings. That doesn't even include Nate McMillan, who was marked as an interim head coach in midseason when he took over for Lloyd Pierce and got an extension this offseason with the Hawks. So first of all, I just want to give a personal shout out to Wes Unseld Jr. I grew up in the D.C. area. Wes Unseld is just a god among gods. If you were a Bulls fan, not only for what he did on the court, but what he did with the franchise afterward for so many years, Wes Unseld Jr. earned his place with so much work over these decades as an assistant coach. Everywhere he has gone, people have raved about him. It feels a little bit to me like Steven Silas, who is sort of one of the most overqualified assistants to not have a head coaching job, and now he finally has one. But I do want to ask you, Richard, about the larger picture here. 6 of 7, that is really what a lot of coaches and players have been asking for.
Well, I think it's just more representative of the league, right? When you look at the overall population of the league, if you will. But no, look, a lot of these coaches have done, you know, Bennett, I had Jamal Mosley as a assistant coach. I've been with Wes Unseld on two different teams,
right?
Yes, two different teams that both went to the postseason, right? So you're an assistant coach on two different teams that went to the postseason, one with the Warriors, one with the Nuggets. And so you look at what the Nuggets have been doing. You look at what the Warriors have been built into. And these are the individuals that are responsible for a lot of that success. So, you know, now they get the opportunity. And I'm already looking forward to the next batch of head coaches because you know how this cycle continues.
Yep.
Hopefully the next opportunity we'll get a female. And there's then some other coaches that get those opportunities.
Well, I think the way that the style has changed for us, the NBA, is all about how you're going to get your players to respond.
Sure.
And you got to put somebody at the head of the snake that could relate to them, that's going to speak their language, that's going to go in there and be able to hold them accountable, but also know what's going on in the outside world. And why I say that, because it's so much that's going on with social media and things to that nature that you have to be able to relate in their terms. And I think we have seen that throughout the playoffs when you look at the Final Fours, right? Ty Lue, you look at, you know,
Nate McMillan.
You look at all these coaches that had that impact, a different voice in the locker room, and you get different results.
Yeah, and look, at some great quotes, too, from Michael Malone in Denver, who, of course, had employed Wes Unseld Jr. most recently. Michael was saying that Wes came to him and said, hey, if I take this Washington job in particular, are people going to think it's just because of my dad? And Michael Malone reminded him, hey, I'm the son. Also, remember, Michael Malone is Brendan Malone's son.
Right.
That doesn't get brought up that much anymore because of everything that Michael has done in his tenure with the Nuggets and before that, of course, as well. And Wes Unseld Jr. will be an asset to the Wizards, just like his father was with the Bullets, and just like Michael Malone, being the son of Brendan, earned every bit of that spot and is going to do just, I think he's going to do a tremendous job. As someone, a Washington, D.C. area native, I could not be more excited about this hire. It's pretty, pretty cool. All right, guys, coming up, we're going to talk more about this series and this game tonight. The Suns, who needs to step up the most? Will it involve maple syrup? Perk is coming in hot on this topic. So stick around. You're watching The Jump.
Oh, ill, Jay. There's a dunk. That's a real dunk right there.
Come on.
Hey, man.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am still here with Kendrick and Richard. And if there is one area that the Suns have struggled in, it is clutch time, gentlemen. The Suns have zero assists in clutch time in this series. Clutch time, of course, is the last 5 minutes with the score within 5 points. Games 1 through 3 were not close enough down the stretch to have clutch time. So there's really only been 7 minutes that we're talking about. So we have to remember, small sample size theater. It's just not good, even in a small sample size. During clutch time in the last two games, Phoenix has been outscored 21-6. They've shot 2 for 9 to go along with 0 assists and 3 turnovers. So, Richard, it's a low bar I'm asking you to hop over here, but how could the Suns be just a little bit better in the clutch if it comes down to a close game tonight?
Pretty much anything at this point in time. Like, it can always get worse, but could they be better? They could. this dude over here is sighing, taking breath. But no, it could be 100% better. They got to clean it up. Now, look, now, when you look at their assists, I don't think that that's a great indication because they have ISO guys. Like, late in game, Booker, go get a bucket. Chris Paul, go get a bucket. They have dominated in that space. But when you see the three turnovers, that's the key because these games are so close that when you get turnovers, like you saw last game, when you get turnovers late in these games, that's the issue, right? And so they can be better, but I think it's more the turnovers versus the assists. You got to clean and get a shot every single time.
Well, I think, you know, when you look at the formula that they had in games one and two, everybody was touching the ball. We were showing tape of the ball swinging. I think it was, what, 9 to 10 passes? 12 at a point, getting great shots, passing up good shots to get great shots. And what I've been noticing is, yes, Devin Booker has been getting off. Yes, he has been scoring 40 on tough contested twos and tough contested threes, but it's been taken away from everyone else, including CP3, right? CP3 hasn't had the ball in his hands of late, especially last game. We saw times where he was standing in the corner. And I think when the Phoenix Suns are at his best, they have the ball in Chris Paul's hands and they're running their sets. They're double staggered with DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker, where Ayton is rolling to the basket, Devin Booker is popping, and now you're getting these switches and these mismatches. And then it translates to the defensive end. When everybody is touching the ball offensively, defensively, you are starting to get engaged, right? Because we're seeing guys not helping. We're watching DeAndre Ayton get put on the island by himself against Giannis, and guys are not digging. Guys are not showing help. Like, guys are not engaged. They have to get back to boxes and elbows, helping the helper, and being engaged as a team on both ends of the floor.
Well, Perk, that's why I would say that, Richard, you said the assists don't matter that much. To me, the assists are the thing. Because, first of all, I'm going to credit the Bucks' defense. They played some very good defense, which has caused some of those turnovers. Mm-hmm. That ball did not pop out of Devin Booker's hands by itself at the end of Game 5. That was Jrue Holiday and P.J. Tucker sort of combining to do that work. But the assists are something that is in their control. Passing the ball, like Perk is talking about. We talked in the first two games that all season Monty Williams has preached the 0.5 offense. Not 7 seconds or left, 0.5 seconds. And the idea is that within half a second, as a Suns player, you are supposed to be able to make a decision. Do you drive, pass, or shoot? Those three things. Mm-hmm. That's not happening if a guy is ISO-ing.
That's not. Go ahead.
And Rachel, that's a great point. And I wanted to bring this up. Even look at the last possession. When Jrue Holiday got the strip, they were able to go boxes and elbows because it was an isolation play. When we are used to looking at the Phoenix Suns team, they have a lot of player movement. They have a lot of action going on. When you go isolation, it's easy for a team like Milwaukee to load up.
And look, we're not going to play the hindsight game. Should they call a timeout? Should they not? But what you get from a timeout is you would get some sort of moving.
Right.
You would get some sort of misdirection. And again, the Bucks have been criticized for a lack of movement at times.
Absolutely.
When you would just have Giannis stand at the key and then just try and go and then distribute. Movement creates offense in an easier way.
Okay, so Perk, you mentioned CP. Is he the player to you that needs to step up the most tonight, or is it someone else on the Sun side?
No, I think it's Cameron Payne and Cam Johnson. I mean, Cameron Payne, when you think about his playoff run this season alone, he had some historical nights off the bench. He was a spark for them. I'm talking about, like, you know, coming out having 25 plus. He has been a factor in these finals. And you think, like, with CP3 times that he was struggling, you thought that Cam Payne would come in and be that guy that could be a spark, give them that energy like he has been in the first couple rounds. He haven't been there in the finals.
Yeah, and I think it's the secondary player also, you know, for the Suns, because Chris Paul, you know, whether he's 100% healthy or not, I think you're kind of capped at what he's going to get. Is he going to give us a 37-point night? If he does, they're going to win. Mm-hmm. I think Devin Booker has maxed out what he's capable of doing. So when you start looking at Ayton, you start looking at Cam Johnson, you start looking at Mikal Bridges, you start looking at Jay Crowder. Those are the individuals you're like, one of y'all going to have to go for 20-plus. Mm-hmm. One of you are going to have a Jrue Holiday-type night where you were just everywhere, and that's the issue right now for the Phoenix Suns.
I mean, look, it's going to be taking all of them. Let's not kid ourselves, right? and it is hard to win four games in a row, and that's something the Suns can lean on.
Well, you know what? I was very critical of Mike Budenholzer, but I'm going to say this. The tides have turned. Like, right now, in my opinion, and, like, when you look at far as these last three games, he's out-coaching Monty Williams. Like, Monty Williams has had some suspect substitutions. He has not changed up his playbook or his defense at all yet and adjusted to the Milwaukee Bucks far as with them putting Giannis at the five and things to that nature.
Well, part of it's hard to make adjustments when you have a more thin roster. And I will keep saying this. I think that Dario Saric injury after game one of these NBA finals, I understand at the time, it's not the flashiest name in this series. So a lot of people didn't pay a ton of attention to it, but it makes them thin enough at that position. It has hampered some of the adjustments that they can make and the rosters that they can roll out there. We will discuss a little bit more coming up right after this break. We will also discuss Drew Holiday, the importance of what his acquisition has made to the Bucks. First, though, here's what the Jump recommends for today. Check out Zach Lowe's piece on how the Suns will need to shoot the ball at a, quote, preposterous level.
Yeah, that means somebody else gonna have to step up. That's Zach Lowe's nice way of saying somebody gonna have to do something special.
That's on ESPN.com and the app. Check it out. So we talked a little bit about the officiating crew earlier in the show, and I wanted to now take a moment to send our thoughts and prayers to another NBA referee, Tony Brown. He officiated his first finals last season. He was with all of us in the bubble. This year, Tony is not here because he is fighting stage 4 pancreatic cancer. After the NBA announced that Tony would miss the remainder of this season, many current and former players tweeted their support. Tony, we miss you here. I just want to make sure everyone knows that there's a little bit less here at this finals, a little bit of a hole in all of our hearts because Tony is not with us.
Yeah, praying for you, Tony. We spent so much time. I would play pickleball with him.
Yes.
I know people don't want to hear this, but Scott Foster pretty much every single day and just a good person and a good human being.
He really is one of the best referees in the game today, in my opinion. And, hey, look, Tony, if you're watching, I apologize for everything I said to you while I was playing that you gave me them technical
That's right. Y'all are nice
now. I never said anything bad to Tony.
Y'all are nice.
That's
now.
Why Tony messed with me, man.
Tony, we can't wait till we see you back here at the finals next
year. I'm sorry
year.
For talking too much, Tony.
Well, that that's I can it. Believe. Yeah, that one it. I buy. Uh-huh. Yeah. We got to talk Drew Holiday. Made one of the biggest plays of the finals to this point when he ripped that ball out of Devin Booker's hands, tossed that breathtaking alley-oop to Giannis, sealed the victory, put the Bucks one win away from a championship. Our Malika Andrews sat down with Holiday to discuss his Game 5 steal and so much more. Take a listen.
You know where we gotta start. We gotta start on the play. Game 5, that steal, and then your assist to Giannis for that oop. Where does that rank in terms of the best plays of your career?
I mean, at this point, I guess it's number one. It was a really big moment. It was a really crucial time, and I mean, it was a pretty good play. Honestly, I feel like I didn't really make the play. Tuck played awesome defense. Book turned it to me, so I grabbed the ball, and then Giannis made the play. I just threw it up. It felt really good to quiet that crowd, and after Giannis dunked it, scream, and virtually it was over.
So when you're watching back the film then of the oop and the dunk, did you see Giannis' stare down after?
Oh yeah, that was intense. That's what I love to see.
That's what you're gonna do in the morning, you know, when you get out of bed, just.
I'll probably scream. I think I screamed. He stared down, I screamed.
Booker comes for the ball, fires a three, bang! Devin Booker from downtown!
What is it like to guard a guy like Devin Booker?
It's a challenge. He can score from everywhere. He can score in a variety of ways, and slowing him down is a challenge, but it's also fun to witness, like, the offensive performances that he's putting on in the finals and how he's just kind of putting his team on his shoulders.
In what ways does that challenge you to be better?
I don't want him to win. You know, I don't want him to win. I don't want him to score. Last game, they ran a play, and Devin Booker came off a down screen for a three. And I was right there, and, like, on the contest, it was like this. And I touched his hand, and he made it. And I'm like, there's nothing better I could have done defensively. Things like that, I'm like, damn. But at the same time, I'm like, that's a hell of a shot. So it's been fun.
The Milwaukee Bucks are one win away from their first title in 50 years.
You said it's no excuses. How do you embody that mindset heading into this game?
honestly, leaving it all out there, playing as smart as you can, playing as hard as you can, playing for your teammates, the person right next to you. That's the reason why we're here. Nobody did it by themselves. I think to be able to embody what you said is play for your teammates, play for the person next to you.
All right, so let's revisit the trade that brought Drew to Milwaukee, guys. The four-team blockbuster, I mean, this was Bucks, Pelicans, Thunder, Nuggets. The Bucks needed to send out multiple first-round picks. Eric Bledsoe went, George Hill went, to get Holiday in that deal. High price to pay, but look, hard to argue. Milwaukee is now only one win away from being NBA champs, and Perk, they followed this up with a huge contract that they gave him. Why was that so key to them getting to this point?
Well, I mean, he was the guy that was going to get them over the hump, and he's done that, right? We all wondered who was going to be that guy alongside Chris Middleton and Giannis to be like that big three, and Drew Holiday has brought that to the Milwaukee Bucks. The most important thing about Drew Holiday is his defensive intensity around the perimeter. To all the young basketball players out there, if you want to watch film on how to guard the perimeter, watch Drew Holiday. He's not afraid of embarrassment. He don't care about getting his ankles broke. He get into you. One thing I saw in this series as well, a chase down block that he could have got dunked on. That's the thing I love about Drew Holiday, that he's willing to lay it all on the line and not afraid of any type of exposure for his negativity or embarrassment. He just wants to win.
Yeah, and wanting to win means that you can't be afraid of that moment. And when you have him at the front, when you have him at the top, and even guys like adding P.J. Tucker on the wing, then you got Giannis down low, you got Brook Lopez last, you are putting yourself in a position to have an elite defensive team. And so Drew Holiday, what I liked about it is it's both ends of the floor. You saw what the Lakers went and got when you got Anthony Davis. You got a dominant person on both ends of the floor. Now, I'm not saying he's Anthony Davis, but he impacted both sides of the ball for them, and it was worth every penny.
I don't love the expression two-way player because everybody should be a two-way player because the game is played at both ends.
But
if we're going to make that distinction, he is one of the best. I would also note he has been through so much off the court, right? We know that his wife, Lauren, had a brain tumor, affected the pregnancy, and their daughter, fortunately, born healthy and safe. Lauren also doing great right now. But it's kind of like Giannis when he talks about, hey, I have been through so much, being a street vendor in Greece and not thinking he would ever get to the NBA. It makes the pressure of a game like tonight. It makes the pressure of game five when Drew Holiday is there on that court in that moment and has to decide after he wrestles the ball away, is he going to pass it up to Giannis who's calling for the ball, or does he just play it safe and dribble it out? The pressure of those moments, it's just a basketball game, and I know it's one of the most important basketball games these guys can play, and they've dedicated their whole lives to it. But if you are Giannis, if you are Drew, if you are Chris Paul has gone through things off the court. If you are these guys who have had a larger and wider perspective, and I see it so much in Drew, I do think it changes the way that you play basketball. We've got guys on both sides who have had those experiences, and I think we'll see some of that come into play tonight. All right, guys, coming up next, we'll finish out our show today by playing Jump Ball. You know how we do on game days. These guys are going to work the betting lines, the over-under, make
Let's
a game
Richard
pick.
Let Richard go first.
We're going to explain to Richard how betting works again. It's going to be very exciting. Stay tuned.
Why not explain it to me? Why are you so upset about it?
Time for some Jump Ball Game 6 edition here. All prop bet lines courtesy of Caesars William Hill. All right, guys, let's start with Giannis. Over under 32.5 total points. Perk, I'm supposed to ask you this question as the expert, but you said you wanted Richard to go first.
Yeah, I want to hear what Richard got.
I think he's going to score 33 points. I'm taking the over.
Okay, I see you. I see you, RJ.
We're teaching Richard how to gamble this week. That's the project.
Yeah, I'm rolling with RJ on that.
Okay, all right. So you think over. All right. So that's the easy one. That's beginner betting because, like, how many points is a simple concept. We're going to get into a little bit more, though. First half spread. Bucks favored by 2.5 at home. So with the spread, Perk, who you got?
I'm going with the Phoenix Suns. I feel like the Phoenix Suns are going to come out, give their best shot in the first half. They're going to be up. So I'm taking the Phoenix Suns because they're getting points.
Oh, they're out. Yeah.
So, Richard, you basically have to decide, are the Suns going to come into halftime winning?
I agree with Perk.
Or are the Bucks only winning by one?
I agree with Perk.
Or two?
I agree with Perk.
You know why you agree with Perk.
No.
We're trying to teach him. I'm trying, America. Yeah. Finally, Richard, who you got to win game six? Is that one you can understand?
I'm going to say the Bucks.
You are?
What?
I think I know. I just think the ones. I think the Suns.
Yeah, it's just tough. They're not gonna do it. Taking the Bucks.
I'm going with Phoenix. I'm taking Phoenix with the points. I'm taking Phoenix for the game. We're going to have a game seven.
Can I say something? Earlier on television, I apologize. I said that Perk's body looked like a melted candle, and that is inappropriate, and I want to apologize. I don't think it looks like a melted candle.
I know Steve reminded you of that. I'm going to get you, man.
It does not look like a melted candle, and that was not nice of me to say that on television.
Do you want to say what you think he looks like?
I just want to say, Packers, y'all can offer me that money. I'll
Enjoy game six tonight. We will catch you tomorrow, no matter who.